Ilu ilu hotzianu, hotzianu mi mitraim, hotzianu mi mitraim dayenu.
Welcome to Podcasting for Pesach. And I am Rabbi Rosenblatt, and with me is...
Rachel Lewinsky.
And our special guest here today is...
Rabbi Federgrun.
Rabbi Ari Federgrun.
Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Rabbi Federgrun is actually a very accomplished scholar, and we're really glad to have him with us here today. And his topic is actually something that I think is going to be very useful for us, because he's going to help us figure out what to focus on at the Seder. There's obviously a lot of materials, a lot of themes, and having some focus is very helpful. So, Rabbi, what do you have for us?
Okay, so before we get into the Seder, I just wanted to throw out a question. When we think about the Jews as they leave Egypt, how would you describe their transition as they're leaving Egypt and moving on to the next stage, accepting the Torah? How would you describe such a transition?
I would say a little scary.
Scary, okay. What type of transition? What type of transition is it? If you try to find a parallel, what would be a parallel transition?
Maybe the parallel, you mean a biblical parallel or just a life parallel? Adolescence going from a child who's sort of dependent on their parents for schedule, etc., to adolescence, maybe.
Okay.
Might be one.
That's a nice way of putting it.
I would say, I'm thinking if it's more of like when you're making any sort of big decision in your life, like those moments of like you're not sure the unknown of what's out there, but you're moving forward. It's also from something that was maybe a unhappy part of their life to something more happiness, like also their emotional state might be something to look forward to.
They got fired. They need a new job.
They do need a new job, yes. They need a new life job.
Looking forward, promises of what's out there.
Exactly. So our rabbis tell us that this actually parallels conversion to a certain degree, which is similar to what you're saying, that the whole conversion process, this is instead of an individually based, but this is really just a community, national type of conversion, where everyone is converting into Judaism.
That's quite a big mikvah.
That is quite a big mikvah. And on that note of a mikvah, there are also parallels between what exactly takes place by a conversion and what took place when they left Egypt.
Well, interesting.
There are specifically two that I'm thinking of. Could you think of any of the connections between what takes place by a conversion and also when they left Egypt?
So, Rachel, you're not going to think of this one, so I'll say it. Brit Milah.
Brit Milah is one of them. That's one of them.
That is one.
One of them is a Brit Milah, that when a person converts, when a male converts, so he has to have a Brit Milah, and also that's what took place in Egypt. And the second one is a little trickier.
Oh, I think I get this one. Is that in order to get out of Egypt, you had to actually do a mitzvah. You had to accept the mitzvah of the Passover offering, the blood on your doorpost. Mm-hmm. You didn't do that, you didn't get out. So if you're not willing to do the mitzvot, you can't actually do the conversion.
Okay, excellent. That's true also for conversion, but it's even closer, the connection, because when you convert, in the times that we had the Beis HaMikdash, our holy temple, you actually had to bring an offering. You had to bring a korban. And so that's also, our rabbis also tell us that they suggest you had to bring a korban Pesach. It was ultimately rejected, but there was an idea suggested that you even had to bring a korban Pesach.
Mm.
So we have a parallel between conversion and leaving Egypt where there was two aspects. One was the Brit Milah and the korban Pesach. So just to
interesting.
Focus on each one, the Brit Milah, who was the first one to have a Brit Milah?
That would be Avraham.
Avraham. And so that, the Brit Milah really signifies the personal connection to God. Avraham had a personal connection to God. It wasn't on a national level, but it was more of a personal connection to God, and he signified that through the Brit Milah. The Korban Pesach seems to signify more of the national conversion, the national relationship of the Jewish people to Hashem. And both are necessary within the process of conversion. And as Rabbi Rosenblatt mentioned, when a person converts, they have to accept upon themselves the mitzvot. They have to accept upon themselves the commandments. That's a personal relationship. But they also have to do one more thing, which is not so well known. The Talmud tells us...
You're talking about cutting off all their hair?
No.
Oh, okay.
Is all right, haircuts. Forget that.
You get your haircut before Kippur Pesach. You should definitely do that. Schedule it now.
And I'd love to hear a podcast on that. The Talmud tells us that they ask them the following questions. They say, why do you want to convert? Don't you know that the Jewish people are, at the present time, anguished, suppressed, harassed?
Is this because we're supposed to push people away so that they'll choose to come back?
That is one understanding, but there's also a very profound second understanding, and that is that We want them to know that when you join the Jewish people, it's not just a personal relationship.
It is
a personal relationship, but it's also a national community relationship. You are now joining into the Jewish people. It's not just a personal one, which is it is, but it's also the national relationship. You are joining into the nation of the Jewish people. And so those two requirements, to join into the nation of the Jewish people and to accept upon yourselves the mitzvot, are requirements prior to conversion, just like the actions of performing the Brit Milah, which signifies the personal connection to Hashem, and the Korban Pesach, which represents the national connection to Hashem. So we have both aspects, both by leaving Egypt and when a person converts.
Right, and I was just thinking, someone who doesn't do Passover, essentially, failure to do Pesach on a certain level, that would be an Iser Karet, right?
That's correct.
So Karet means excommunication. So sort of, you know, it doesn't really apply strictly, I think, to our Seders, but the idea that someone who, you know, in all the surveys and Jewish indicators, probably a good chance, somebody who says, okay, you know, I'm not interested in Passover, I don't do that this holiday, it's not for me, your chances of really remaining in the fold of whatever we define as the Jewish community are pretty slim. I like to tell people about my uncle who used to work on Wall Street, and he would get off the train from New Jersey every morning, and he would walk past some sandwich shop which would serve bacon, lettuce, and tomato on matzah. All right, so that sort of seems like an oxymoron. Like, why would you eat bacon on matzah? But I think Passover matzah is such an identity food, sort of like what you're saying. Like, it's not that one way to think of it, possibly, and you can tell me if this is really correct, is that we're engaging in an identity reaffirmation process at the Seder. And so matzah is identity food for us. Not eating matzah is almost like you're failing to re-register to vote, or you're failing to do an activity which sort of registers you as a Jew. And so those people who are eating the bacon, lettuce, and tomato matzah, okay, it's fine. I can not eating pork, that I know I sinned for that. I beat my chest on Yom Kippur, but not eating matzah, I'm not Jewish.
That is exactly where I wanted to go with it. In fact, there's an opinion that says that when they put the blood on the doorposts when they left Egypt, it says that which blood did they put on?
From their sheep.
It was from the sacrifice, from the Korban Pesach, but they also, together with that, they put on the blood of the Brit Milah. Both of them together, they put on the doorpost. And what does blood represent? Blood represents your essence, your identity. That's who you are. So they are putting their identity on the doorpost, which I think is the focus of the Seder night, exactly as Rabbi Rosenblatt mentioned. It's about your identity, who you are. Why are we proud to be part of the Jewish people? Why are we proud to have a relationship, a personal relationship with Hashem?
All right, I'm going to close with one question for you and for Rachel also. Blood inside the doorpost or outside? In other words, does this blood need to be shown to the Egyptians, or is this blood for the edification of your family? Okay, I'll let Rachel go first.
Maybe I'm wrong, and I have two rabbis here to tell me otherwise, but I always thought it was for the outside, that was something that you need to show to everyone else.
I think it was for the outside, but it's all, I think...
But now that I'm listening, it's kind of also for your personal.
It's also for yourself. As you go into your home, you're leaving the outside, going into your home, you have to understand who you are. What is your identity?
And as you're talking about community, I kind of am going back to how a Seder is community, right? We don't just sit in our house by ourselves having our own Seder, but it's something that we invite other people to whether it's to your local community Seder or your own home, you invite your family and friends to be a part of it. So that's kind of your message of it's not just a personal thing, but we're part of a community and a nation then that we... takes Pesach and really symbolizes that.
That's great. Well, that's a perfect note to end on. Thank you, Rabbi Federgren.
Thank you.
Die, die, inu, die, inu, die, inu.